This is the Last Week in English podcast, winter semester 2019-20, week 3, with me, Mark Jacob, coming to you from the TU Berg Academy Freiburg. My guest today was born in Slovakia, moved to England at the age of 11 months, and then to Germany at the age of 4. At home, he speaks English and Slovak, and at school, German. But three languages wasn't enough for him, so now he's also learning French and Spanish. He's kindly agreed to come onto the podcast today to talk to us about his experiences, mainly of learning and using languages. So, welcome, Dominic Jacob.
Thanks a lot.
So, I mentioned in the introduction that you moved to Germany at the age of 4. Did you speak German when you moved to Germany?
No. Well, I remember we had a few films at home that were in German, but I didn't really speak German, and it was a bit tough at the beginning because probably my first year at kindergarten, I just spent listening to the others and observing the others and not speaking myself. But then after that, it got going and it got better review.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then how was it later at school?
At school, I can't remember having any problems with German.
Yeah, and I mentioned that you also speak English at home, and in Germany, you learn English at school. So how were your English lessons?
Well, the English lessons were always, I'll just say it like that, boring, because usually the teacher didn't give me any extra tasks to do. Once I remember in the grammar school in seventh grade, the teacher gave me a book to read and some exercises to do with the book. But the exercises were also just very standard exercises. And so I just read the book in the end, didn't do the exercises. But that was always, it wasn't an issue for me. It wasn't a big issue. Because I could just not do anything and dream in the lesson, but yes.
Okay, and did that change later on when the tasks maybe got a bit more demanding in English?
It got more interesting, because now we actually write more texts and also do discussion rounds, and texts are a type of activity that is highly variable in difficulty. Mm-hmm. So you can, I write the same content in a very simple way or in a much more difficult manner. And that's why now it's much, much better already.
Mm-hmm. And how was it, you think, for your English teachers, having someone in the class who, let's say, spoke English every day at home?
Well, I guess it must have been a little bit frustrating, because if they had wanted to give me exercises, then they would have had to work them out extra. They had all of the exercises for the other class, and they would have to give me extra exercises. So I can see why they didn't want to have any extra work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it must have been tough, but on the other hand, if they just let me do whatever I want to, then it wasn't hard for them.
Right.
So okay. Depends on what they made out of the situation.
Right. And how was it for your classmates then, if you had to do pair work, say?
Well, I think most of my classmates, it did not bother. It didn't have... I can't remember anything special about it. I can't remember it having that big of an influence. Mm-hmm. Because usually also you sat next to the same partner.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you knew each other a little bit. That wasn't usually a problem.
Right. And what about then, well, because that's not really a foreign language for you, English. What about your first experiences of learning a foreign language?
Well, the main difference was the grammar.
Mm-hmm.
Because in English, I never had to learn grammar and also in the German lessons where we talked about grammar, I didn't pay much attention because I just didn't understand what you would need it for.
Mm-hmm.
And so grammar has always been a bit more difficult for me,
mm-hmm.
In French. But somehow I feel like I managed to get around the grammar a little bit,
mm-hmm.
by communicating, and it wasn't a big issue, but I tried to sneak around the grammar part a little bit.
Right. But do you remember your first experiences of learning?
Like the first lesson?
Yeah.
No. Because I remember singing songs and talking about very basic topics, but no, I don't remember much. I just remember our first Spanish lesson, where we all had to say our motivations
mm-hmm.
for being in the Spanish class.
Right, because you chose to do Spanish.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We had four choices. That was in eighth grade, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose Spanish. And so the teacher wanted to know of everybody why they were there. And that's mm-hmm. what I remember.
Okay. Do you remember your motivation?
I just didn't know what to say. I said, because I want to learn Spanish, obviously. But mm-hmm. some of the others had more specific reasons, like wanting to go to Spain, mm-hmm. or my person that sat next to me, he chose Spanish so that he could later on discontinue French.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was also a motive amongst the students, because that gave you the possibility to start again from zero.
Right.
And Spanish apparently was easier than French. I would agree that Spanish is easier than French.
Right.
So it was a new opportunity for some people.
Okay. How long was it after you started learning Spanish, say, before you really could communicate in the language then, before it moved from being just a school subject to being something you could actually use?
I can't remember any specific time frame.
Mm.
I can only vaguely remember that at the beginning, conveying meaning was very difficult,
mm-hmm.
and it was very slow, and it took a long time. But then with time it got better. But unfortunately, I can't remember any specific time frames, mm-hmm. how long it took. Mm-hmm. I estimate that around a year after mm-hmm. I started Spanish at school, I started communicating and experimenting with that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, I can't give any dates.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and who did you start communicating with?
Well, I went onto a website
mm-hmm.
and called iTalki.
Mm-hmm.
And there, first, I just texted some people, and then we Skyped, but eventually I found a Mexican student,
mm-hmm.
and then I started regularly Skyping with her,
mm-hmm.
like once a week. And at the beginning, we were talking both English and Spanish, or even German a little bit. Mm-hmm. It was a type of language exchange, but we ended up just speaking Spanish. So
right.
I got quite a lot of benefits from that.
Okay, and how did that happen then? Were you more motivated than your partner?
Yes. And also, I don't know what exact reasons it had. It just developed into that direction. And she was pretty good at English anyway. So
right.
She didn't really need the practice necessarily.
Right. And how long did you talk for, and how often did you talk?
Well, mostly once a week, until quite recently where it's gone down a bit, but mm-hmm. At the beginning it was more once a week or once every 2 weeks, and then usually in sessions of about 4 hours or up to 4 hours, let's put it that way, and right. between 1 and 4 hours.
Right, okay, that's quite a long period of time.
Yes, yes. But if you have somebody that you can... that seems If they're on a wavelength with you,
mm-hmm.
then it's okay, and then the time passes much quicker.
Right. And once you started communicating with someone, with a native Spanish speaker, then did you notice your Spanish improving, like at school, for example?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But it has to be said that before I started actually communicating, I listened a lot to some Spanish radio, to Spanish music. And the first thing that I had to learn was to, when a native speaker was speaking a relatively quick language, to actually identify the words.
Mm-hmm.
Because initially it usually just sounds like one single long word
mm-hmm. right.
that they're saying, and I had to identify the syllables and then the words and then mm-hmm. The meanings of the words. So I think that was the first step. And then came the communication. Of course, I wasn't perfect at understanding Spanish yet.
Mm-hmm.
But then came the communication. And as I said, I can't give any concrete data
mm-hmm.
concerning how quickly it developed. Mm-hmm. But I did definitely notice an improvement, yes.
Right, okay. And were you able to communicate with your classmates then in Spanish? Or had any of them also done something similar to you?
No. I think some of them had been to Spanish-speaking countries,
mm-hmm.
but none of them had done an exchange. And if they had been to a Spanish-speaking country, it was just for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know of any of my classmates that communicated with Spanish speakers on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But to come back to the question,
mm-hmm.
There wasn't that much, I can't remember that much communication between the classmates in right. the lessons. At the beginning, we mainly did grammar exercises, then also language games where you had to guess vocabulary or mm-hmm. things like that to make it more fun.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we sang songs, mm-hmm. just the standard things that you would do at the beginning of a course when somebody's learning language.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember that much actual communication. And the communication that we had in class mainly consisted of scripted dialogues,
right.
at least from what I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because the teacher thought that most of my classmates wouldn't have the potential yet to actually speak.
Mm-hmm.
If that was so, I do not know, but...
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were actually using the language outside the classroom and making progress there, and inside the classroom you were doing something different then, let's say, like games, exercises.
Yes, more or less.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what was it about Spanish? Was there anything in particular about Spanish that motivated you, like the music or the culture?
Oh, I just love the sound of the language.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was beautiful. I didn't even like the writing that much. So I didn't read a lot of literature
mm-hmm.
Or texts in general. I just loved the way it sounded, and I loved speaking it
mm-hmm.
and how it sounded when I spoke it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really what motivated me
mm-hmm.
To actually start speaking it. And also what I did before speaking, before communicating, and during communicating, was learning song texts and mm-hmm. then singing them.
Right.
And while the listening had helped with identifying the different words, the singing the songs actually helped me string together words to make, to get more fluent, to accustom my muscles to forming these sounds and these strings of sounds.
Right. And you enjoyed that anyway.
I enjoyed that anyway, yes.
Yeah.
So that was also a good practice that I got.
Right. Okay. And what about French then? Because you also learned French. You started learning French before Spanish, is that right?
Yes. 2 years before Spanish.
Mm-hmm. And... did you do something similar with French?
No, No. I didn't. No, I didn't do anything similar with French. I didn't have anybody online to talk with, nor in person, because with Spanish, I sometimes also met up with Spanish speakers.
In Freiburg?
Yes, or with Spanish exchange students that were at my school.
Mm-hmm.
But in French, I didn't do anything of the similar. I think I only started with that a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning, I can't remember doing that. And my development in French was also slower than in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I even considered my Spanish better than my French,
mm-hmm.
even though I had only learned it for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but and that time French for 4 years then?
Yes. But that was also due to the fact that I didn't have that much motivation, as much motivation for French as I had for Spanish, especially in this speaking aspect.
Right, okay. But, well, I can say you've never visited a Spanish-speaking country, is that right?
Unfortunately not.
But a French-speaking country you have visited, you've been to France.
Several times, yes.
And did that increase your motivation for French?
Actually did, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think I went to France on 3 or 4 occasions.
Mm-hmm.
No, probably 5.
Mm-hmm.
Once when I was really small.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, it couldn't increase my motivation.
Yeah.
And then in the holidays, it did, but it did a little bit, but I didn't get a lot of practice in usually, because it's surprising how, it's surprising but true how you can be in a country, but not actually speak the language.
Right.
If you just stay with your family or with the people that you're going there, then you don't actually have to speak the language, just on very few occasions. And that's why I think that going to the country is very nice, but just for learning the language, it's more effective to just speak to somebody from that country, to speak to a native speaker,
mm-hmm.
and instead of going there, because that takes a lot of time and resources.
Right. And now that's possible online, and you said you did that Skype. Maybe you can just say a little bit more about iTalki and how you got to speak regularly with your, let's say, tandem partner, we could call it. Just give the students listening some ideas.
Yes, well, iTalki isn't the only website.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of websites. I think there's another one called HelloTalk that a friend of mine uses. And there are probably quite a few more. But I used iTalki. I think I found it over YouTube. And then I just gave it a shot. And
Did you set up a profile there?
Yes, of course. You have to set up a profile, then text some people and see if they respond, then find somebody to Skype with, and then you Skype a few times with them, and then if it gets boring, then you stop Skyping, and otherwise you continue. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to go through quite a few people to actually find somebody that you can connect with better. But in the end, it was highly beneficial, I find, and it paid off very well.
How many people did you talk to before you kind of settled on one main?
Yeah. I can't remember, actually. I can't remember. It wasn't that many, actually. Maybe around 10 or so.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember.
Yeah, okay. So the students could just go onto one of these websites, get a profile, try talking to a dozen or so people. Now maybe they'll click with somebody, and they can do that from their room.
The comfort of their home. It's especially good for other languages,
mm-hmm.
except apart from English,
mm-hmm.
because English is everywhere,
mm-hmm.
And some other languages aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So especially if you have more specific wishes for languages, if you want to learn. Yes, okay, actually the university is quite quite international.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to learn something very specific, then you could go to one, resort to one of these websites
mm-hmm.
and find people to speak with.
Right. Okay. And your tandem partner even visited you.
Is that yes. She came one winter because she was doing a tour of Europe, visiting a few people. So she also stopped off at our place. And that was nice. I showed her a little bit about around Dresden
mm-hmm.
and also around Freiburg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was very nice, very enjoyable.
Right. And with your French and Spanish, then you also entered a competition. Is that right?
Yes, that was in 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember how I found this competition or what led me to participate, but I just thought, okay, I'll give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
In the first round, you had to produce a video and an audio.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't put much effort into that. I just, just did it. And then that qualified you to go to a second round,
mm-hmm.
which was writing a test with writing exercises, listening exercises, and just the typical kind of test that you would get. That. Yes, yeah. Exactly, at school. And then the best ones from this test were chosen to go to a type of seminary or to the final stage of the competition,
mm-hmm.
Which was... which brought the winners from the whole nation together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually in Meissen this year. Mm-hmm. That year.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, so I was fortunate enough to be able to go there to Meissen, to the final stage. And that was the most interesting stage. That was really nice because we were on... It was a type of chateau,
mm-hmm.
and that was quite nice. Just the whole surroundings as well, and all of the exercises we did were interesting. So we had, I believe, we had four things that we were judged by, four tests, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
One was a speaking test. One was a writing test.
Mm-hmm.
One I can't remember right now. Mm-hmm. And the last one was to write a theater piece,
mm-hmm.
a short, you could call it a sketch. Mm-hmm. It was only supposed to be 3 to 5 minutes long.
Right.
And then you would act it out with your team.
Mm-hmm.
So you got assigned a team, and then with those you had to solve this last task.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and there were participants, we can call them all competitors, from all over Germany and with various language combinations.
Yes, you always, everybody had two languages,
mm-hmm.
a first language and a second language.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be anything from Latin, Greek, to Russian, Spanish, French, English. I think they even had Polish, but I'm not sure,
mm-hmm.
because in some parts of Germany you can learn Polish.
Mm.
Yes, so there was great diversity in the language combinations.
Right, and you did pretty well in the competition and won a prize. Why do you think you got the prize? What do you think it was about your language communication?
Because I was very surprised, to be honest, because all of the others were also excellent in their languages,
mm-hmm.
and had a lot of knowledge about the languages and all of that. But in the end, I think it was because, in in the competition, they wanted to have get a little bit more out of you, something that was more than what you did at school. And there was a strong focus on communication, on this oral communication. Okay, we wrote one text, but actually I think that was the only text we wrote. And everything else was orally. One of the exercises was, well, we got taken into the into a museum in Meissen, and there we had to we got a tour, and we had to gather information, and then we were brought back and had an hour or so to work out a presentation about Meissen. And we had the scenario that we were tourist agents and we were supposed to bring investors to Meissen and give a presentation about the advantages of Meissen. And that was quite an authentic task. I think a lot of the people that were at the competition weren't used to that kind of task, because I'd never seen anything similar in my school time before. And then also writing the theatre piece, I think, was quite an unusual task. And it, there was a strong emphasis on communication. And yes, I think that's what gave me a little bit of an edge, this communicating in authentic scenarios.
And yeah, as well as learning languages, you're also interested in the teaching of languages, and the word authentic and reminds me that you also wrote a, let's say, a 10th grade assignment or 11th grade assignment, this Facharbeit, 11th grade, an assignment in 11th grade about, let's say, teaching language and about authenticity in teaching language. The way you learned the language, it seemed to help you in authentic situations. Could you tell us a little bit about that assignment that you did?
Actually, yes, I can. Actually, it had two parts. One discussed communicative language teaching. That is an approach to language teaching. An accumulation of theories, you could call it, about language teaching. And one of the principles that often comes up in communicative language teaching is the principle of authentic communication. And then in my second, in the second part of this project, I discussed it and contrasted it with the IRF exchange, which is also another communicational pattern in the classroom.
IRF means?
Initiation, response, follow-up. The teacher initiates initiates the conversation, asks a question or something similar. Then the student is supposed to respond to that. And then the teacher gives a follow-up to the student, in which the student will get to know if the answer was correct or not.
Okay. Right. And authentic, in this case, what does that mean?
Well, I found some criteria for authenticity in the literature. One of them was, for example, contingency, that the partners, interlocutors, react to each other's utterances during the conversation and adjust them. In a scripted dialogue, this wouldn't be the case. So, unless a scripted dialogue isn't authentic, or spontaneity was a big is a big part of authentic communication, which means that you don't know where the conversation is going to end, where it's going to take you. Now, for example, you do know where it's going to lead, but usually in an authentic context, you don't know where you're going to end up talking. And there were, I found four other criteria.
Okay. So you discussed communicative language teaching, authentic communication, and as well as discussing, you also gathered some data.
Yes. What I did was I recorded two lessons at school and then wrote them down and analyzed them. But then again, that was pretty unscientific because I had some difficulties with this research part. In the first lesson, everything went well. I could record everything. I could write it down. But in the second lesson that I recorded, the battery of my recording device died in the middle of the lesson, which was pretty unfortunate. So I only had half a lesson. I only had 25 minutes of content. And 1.5 lessons isn't really representative. It was still an interesting experience to make conducting this research, but unfortunately I couldn't draw any conclusive results from it.
Okay. You didn't get a conclusive,
but I did have some results.
What kind of idea, what direction was it pointing in then? The data that you gathered?
I counted out the words and in the first lesson, and it turned out that the teacher had spoken 73% of the words. I think it was 73. It was around three quarters of the words that were spoken. And then around 20 was the students reading out texts. And I can't remember the exact percentages, but a very low percentage was the students actually giving an answer. So the conclusion that I drew from that was that the teacher usually speaks without realizing that they speak. And if at the end of the lesson sometimes they might think that it was a very communicative lesson, but often it's just them that are speaking. So I could draw conclusions concerning student activity and teacher activity, because there were 27 students in the classroom that only had, let's say, 10% of the language output. But then again, in that lesson, there was also pair work. That also has to be seen, and that I couldn't record, because if 27 students are talking, I couldn't distinguish anything in the audio.
Right. And what level was that?
That was supposed to be A2 to B1. Was seventh graders.
So they should already be able to say something.
They should be able to express themselves to a certain degree.
Okay. What did that make you think then, the results that you got? Did that surprise you, or?
Well, I just could see that the principle of student activity while the teacher is passive isn't always followed as it could be followed. That was really the conclusion that I drew from that.
You mean that the teacher is overactive and
it's easy for the teacher to get overactive. But then again, I should have started earlier with the project, and I should have got some more lessons recorded.
Well, I think that's the same with any research project. There's always more to be done. You learn from what you've done previously, then you get the next project.
But
And what was the reaction from the teachers then?
When I presented it to them.
So you actually presented it to the teachers as well?
There were two presentations. One directly after I had written it and handed it in. And that actually got marked. There were only two teachers present. And the reaction was pretty positive, because we had a little discussion at the end, and could exchange ideas. And we, I think I and the teachers, we both found it very valuable, this exchange of ideas. Also concerning the totality of my work that I did, not just the research.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, on this Monday, actually,
mm-hmm.
I presented my work to more teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 10 altogether.
Mm.
But the reaction wasn't that ecstatic. It was mainly... It was mainly two teachers that were very enthusiastic and at the end discussing with me and talking about the ideas. And the other teachers seemed, quite frankly, pretty overworked,
okay.
And pretty tired. And they didn't really seem to have the energy to say anything or even follow the presentation. So that was a bit disappointing. But
yeah, that's normal for a lesson. Maybe some of the students have got more energy than others.
Maybe that's how the teachers feel in a usual lesson. I don't know.
But they didn't feel like they were being criticized and they at all.
I didn't get any real feedback from all of the teachers at the end. As I said, just two teachers really. And I don't think they felt attacked or offended, I don't know about the other teachers. I tried to present it in a way that wouldn't attack anybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've had your first little, let's say, experience of research in linguistics. Would you like to take that further? Are you interested in the topic further? Or is it now mainly just the learning the languages?
No, absolutely. I think that's going to be the direction that I will be going in linguistics or even applied linguistics. But I still have to inform myself a little bit more what that would entail, what universities there are.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a little bit of work to do there.
Right. So that's something you could be interested in studying.
Oh, yes, definitely. I can't think of anything that would be more interesting. So yes.
And what about the future of Spanish and French speaking?
Well, originally I always had the goal to take my Spanish to a C2 level.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, now I've come to the conclusion that you only have to take it as far as necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really enjoy about Spanish is the speaking aspect. Mm-hmm. So maybe what I will be seeking to do in Spanish is to get a bit more vocabulary, to learn a few new ways to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't be doing any big advancements.
Mm-hmm.
And with French, I still have to advance it a little bit for my exams,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the year. But apart from that, I don't have any great ambitions for French either, except for if I decide to study in France.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would have to take it to another level.
Mm-hmm.
But unless I decide to study in France, then rather than... continuing with rather than advancing my French and Spanish, I would like to maybe look at some more new languages.
Hmm.
On my list are Arabic and also Esperanto, just out of curiosity. I don't want to take Esperanto too far, but I'd just like to peek into it. Yes, those are the two main things.
Okay, so you could be learning Arabic in the future. And if you do learn Arabic, then how are you going to start?
Well, I think that I'll probably start in a very classical way,
mm-hmm.
With a textbook or a few textbooks. And then, but I'll still seek to start communicating very quickly, very early.
Mm-hmm.
But I think textbooks are great and they can give you a structure and they can help you. Just if you stick to them for too long, then that's not good. But then again, Arabic is completely different than then Spanish and French. They're both Romance languages, so they're fairly similar,
mm-hmm.
and or also fairly similar to English, which helped me out a lot. So learning Arabic would be a completely new experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a big challenge.
Maybe. A big challenge. I might have to adjust some things, adjust some ways of learning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Dominic, for telling us about your experiences, about your language learning, your forays into research, and about what directions you might take in the future.
Thanks a lot for having me on.